Hello there, and welcome to the debate on Press TV. We're coming to you from Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behrou Sanchafi. It's good to have you with us. The Lebanese capital, Beirut, is hosting the Arab Economic and Social Development Summit. The majority of heads of the state have refrained from attending the summit, seemingly an indication of political rift and division among Arab states membering the Arab League. Syria was not represented in the meeting, but was one of the major topics on the agenda. Lebanon and Iraq want Syria back, but others have doubts or think otherwise. Now, will Arab states be able to put their differences aside? What's future holding for the Arab League? Let's talk to our correspondent, Mariam Saleh, for more details about the Beirut summit first. Mariam, over to you.
Well, as you probably followed up with us, we saw clearly that this was true. It was an economic, it was a social summit. We saw the closing statement with details of some projects and so on and so forth. However, it was the political part that was very much overshadowing. The political rifts and the controversy was clearly overshadowing this, this summit before it even started. And we saw this clearly in the foreign minister meeting two days ago, and all the talks that seemed to be ongoing before, the visits to the region, especially for U.S. Assistant Secretary of State David Hale, who seemed to clearly extend a message to some of the heads of state not to attend, that this is an issue that needs to be, that Lebanon should be boycotted somewhat. And we heard that from the Lebanese foreign minister, Gibran Basile, saying he thanked the Qatari emir for breaking that siege against this summit specifically. Now, when asked this question, the Arab Secretary General, the Arab League Secretary General, refused to comment, or he said he has no details about such an issue. But it seemed that this was clear. Now, why Lebanon has been firm in its stance and saying that Syria needs to return to the Arab League. Now, as you know, Syria's membership of the Arab League was suspended back in 2012. And during that time, there was a lot of negative rhetoric against the Syrian government. And with the beginning of the crisis, this was at that time, it wasn't very difficult for several Arab states to agree to this decision. And Lebanon believes that Syria should not be put in the hands of terrorism. It should be in under the family, if we may say, the umbrella of the Arab Brotherhood in order for it to be able to go back to this, perhaps a reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you for that, Mariam Saleh, our correspondent, reporting from the Lebanese capital of Beirut, where the summit was held. Now, let me invite our guests who will be discussing the issue. In this edition of the debate today, we'll have Richard Millet, who's a journalist and political commentator, joining us from London. Also, Bresh Yonker, journalist with Al Masdar News out of Brussels. Now, beginning with Richard Millet. Richard, only heads of state from Qatar and Mauritania were in attendance in the Beirut summit. Other countries suffice to sending ministers to represent them. Some of them even were absent. Now, a number of analysts regard the meeting as a failure for the Arab League. How do you see that?
Yeah, I agree, Beirut. I think it is a failure. It shows how unimportant this meeting was, how little faith anyone has in this meeting. I think this meeting had two objectives, one to support Lebanon and one about the reconstruction of Syria involving the return of the refugees to Syria. But and as you also was also mentioned in that report, the return of Syria to the Arab League. So three objectives in effect, but there's no hope or no faith, because I think people realize that Syria isn't a properly functioning country anymore. The Assad regime isn't an elected regime. Assad has been involved in the murder of 500,000 of his own civilians. He's forced out millions of his own people. Syria is a country that needs not just reconstruction, desperate reconstruction, humanitarian aid, but also the end of this monstrous regime. So no one's going to return to Syria. None of the refugees will want to return to Syria and to the potential bloodshed that could take place again, either from the regime or from ISIS or from Al-Qaeda. Then there's a potential invasion of by Turkey. Then there's a stranglehold that Russia and Iran has over Syria. Including Hezbollah, and it's just total chaos in Syria, and this is going to go on now. Unfortunately, we saw a suicide bombing last week involving the murder of many Syrian civilians plus American military personnel, and America's on the verge of potentially withdrawing from Syria. It's a potential chaos. It's an unsolvable situation until Assad goes and there's properly democratic elections and a properly constituted constitution.
Yeah, we'll come to the issue of Syria later on in the show. Let me go to Bresht. Bresht, the Emir of Qatar left Lebanon a few hours after the summit was opened. And then the Lebanese presidential palace said that the Emir was there only to attend the opening session and indicate support for Lebanon. What is this an indication of, in your opinion?
I believe that just as we have seen before, I believe that the state of Qatar is finally starting to realize that the nations that they have relied on so far, up until a few years ago, are definitely not their proper allies. I'm talking, of course, on the nation, the big player, power brokers in the region, being Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, and their Gulf allies, members of the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council, and such. Of course, we have seen before, we've seen already for years now, the extended pressure they have put on Qatar in order to make Qatar completely abandon its own sovereign course and sovereign independent foreign policy as a nation, and basically slavishly follow the dictates from Riyadh and whoever is in control of Riyadh, and of course that also includes the United States of America. So I think that the fact that that Emir Al-Thani has decided to eventually join or at least attend part of the economic and social conference that is taking place in Beirut, I think that it's a very important message that they send, that despite the fact, of course, that Qatar does not agree with Lebanon on everything, and we have seen Qatar play a not always very positive role, sometimes even destructive role, especially since 2011, 2012, in their support of the Muslim Brotherhood-related groups in Syria and its surroundings, that at least maybe Qatar is now coming, let's say, to its senses and has decided that for them it's more important that they can follow their own independent policy and decide for themselves without the influence and the dictates of Saudi Arabia what is best for their nation.
Mm-hmm. All right, back to London. Richard, officials in Lebanon and also regional leaders are divided over the reinstatement of Syria into the 22-member Arab League and also on the status of Syrian refugees in host countries. Now, do you expect to see further division among Arab leaders or compromising unity?
No, I mean, as I said before, Beirut, I just don't see any advance taking place because the Arab League recognizes that Syria potentially isn't even, dare say this, an Arab country, isn't controlled by an Arab, it's virtually controlled by Iran now. And so to say that it could, how can you admit a country into the Arab League that is controlled by Iran? It's kind of ridiculous, really. And Assad has no say in the role of the direction of Syria anymore. He has to go by what Turkey, Russia, and Iran say. It just doesn't make sense until there's some sort of peace and reconciliation
Syria. Let's go to Brussels and ask
Bresht. How can it be pot?
Bresht, do you agree with Richard that Syria is being controlled by anybody other than Assad?
I think that's an absolutely ludicrous notion, to be quite honest. I think the idea, and that's something you see all the time, it's the same, it's this demonization of Iran and of Russia that we have seen, well, basically for years. In the case of Iran, we've been seeing this for the past 40 years. The idea that these nations such as Iraq or Iran or Iraq or Syria and recently Yemen are like controlled by Iran or under the influence of Iran, I find it a very interesting fantasy that they have spun here. Because I think the reason for that being is that it's always nice to point the finger at somebody else and to make up a story that sounds believable in order to take away attention from the reality that we have at home. I heard Mr. Millett say that indeed that Syria is controlled by Iran and therefore is not always considered a proper Arab nation. But then, of course, and you can ask the question then, why do they allow nations such as Saudi Arabia in the Arab League? Saudi Arabia wouldn't have been a country if it wasn't funded by the British Empire back in the 1930s, and it would not be a country still right now if it wasn't completely propped up and kept on surviving as an artificial structure by the United States. Same goes for the United Arab Emirates. The same goes for the Kingdom of Bahrain. So there are so many of these states that you can ask very legitimate questions about who is in control, who is controlling them. But at the end of the day, this does not exactly matter when we're talking about the diplomatical summit. The Arab League was supposed to be a unit, a forum for Arab nations to come together, Arab governments to come together and negotiate. There are republics in it, there are monarchies in it. You have conservative regimes, you have progressive regimes, and you have all sorts of different countries together, theocracies and secular governments as well. So in the end, it doesn't matter what you allege the shady overlords are, let's say, of the country. What matters is that Syria is a nation that at this point has been unified for over 75-80% of the country has been unified once again under the Syrian Arab Republic and under the legitimate government of the Syrian Arab Republic and its president. And as such, this fact has to be agreed upon. I mean, we're, for crying out loud, they even accepted Libya back in the Arab League. Libya is a country that is represented in the Arab League by a government that is barely in control of its own capital, and yet this nation, these people are allowed to send representatives because they are considered officially to be the government of Libya. So why cannot it be the same thing applied to the Syrian Arab Republic?
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let me put this question to Richard. Richard, Lebanon is hosting hundreds of thousands of Syrian refugees, as you know, and it wants to see their, quote, safe return, as Michel Aoun said today in the summit. They should be safely returned to Syria regardless of a political solution to the crisis in Syria. What's this rush for on the part of Lebanon?
Well, Lebanon doesn't want to support the refugees. We've seen many Arab countries not, for example, admit Palestinians that they've taken in to the workforce. You know, the Palestinians who are resident in many of these Arab countries are treated like third-class citizens. They're kept in refugee camps just to be a thorn in Israel's side, just to say, look, this is all Israel's problem. They have to go back to Israel when it's not Israel's problem. They don't want to settle the refugee crisis. They don't want to help with admit any of their refugees into the workforces, into the Lebanese economy, into the Jordanian economy, into the Assyrian. I mean, the Palestinians, for example, in Syria are treated like animals. And I can understand that the Syrian refugees in Arab countries are also going to be treated in very, very disrespectful manner. So the best way for,
but Richard,
unfortunately,
Lebanon
countries
stood
like
by
Lebanon
Syria.
To treat them.
Richard, Lebanon and Iraq, they stood by Syria ever since the crisis engulfed that country. Unlike other Arab states that are now coming back gradually, like the UAE and Bahrain just opened their embassies again there. Let me now go to Brecht. Syria's membership in the Arab League was suspended, you know, in late 2011, early 2012, after the country, you know, faced that crisis. Then the Lebanese Foreign Minister Gebran Bassil wants Syria back in the Arab League. He says that Syria, I'm quoting, should be in our arms rather than being thrown into the arms of terrorism. Now, the same stance was echoed by the Iraqi Foreign Minister, but Arab League Secretary General Abul Gait is saying that Arab states still disagree whether Syria should be reinstated or not. What's the prospect of a Syrian reinstatement in the Arab League?
I would say I am mildly positive, let's say, but like about the future of Syria being reintegrated into the Arab League. I believe that eventually they have to come around. I mean, we have seen that nations such as the UAE, which is definitely not a has definitely not been a positive influence on the region in the past years, it has come around and eventually has had to face the facts and recognized, you know, the fact that the Syrian Arab Republic is here to stay for the time being. So they have to they had to accept this. Of course, that does not mean that the UAE is immediately going to accept Syrian reintegration into the Arab League, and especially, of course, other nations such as Saudi Arabia will definitely not do this in the immediate future. Especially not when if the United States were to keep barring the door for Syrian reintegration in the region. However, I do believe that if you see such open support, pretty courageous support actually, in the Arab League by representatives of both Lebanon and Iraq, and I believe that Lebanon has actually almost willingly, knowingly, let's say, shot themselves in the foot by being so openly pro-Syrian. I think they kind of maybe expected that being openly supportive of Syrian reintegration in the Arab League would have very negative influence on some of the more reactionary states in the league, that would decide to, for example, withdraw their most important delegations, not send their heads of states or their presidents or kings. And in this case, this has actually happened. But although you can say that this meeting, as a result, has suffered, I believe Lebanon was. I don't think Lebanese they're not stupid, right? So they know that stuff like that, something like this could have happened, that they have taken that chance, which I believe is very brave of them. So that's to wrap it up. Like I said before, I think in time, but it can take several more years. Syria will most likely, I hope, be reintegrated into the league.
Now, Richard, what's the role of the United States and Saudi Arabia here? Would Arab unity, if it ever happens, benefit Washington?
Well, of course. I mean, Arab unity would benefit the region, would benefit the Middle East, would benefit the rest of the world.
I'm talking about Washington.
A huge amount of instability. I mean, Washington has been safeguarding a lot of the problems around the world over the last few years, which is why Trump wants to withdraw from that role. So stability in the region, unity, stopping attacking Israel. But the main problem is Iran, as ever. You know, whatever happens with unity amongst the Arab world, the main enemy of the Arab world, it seems to be where Iran makes
itself
the enemy.
On what basis, Richard?
Of the Arab world. And of Israel. I mean, as I've said repeatedly on this channel, Iran wants to destroy Israel, and instead of concentrating on the good of its own people, it seems to be spending billions of pounds with the sole intent of destroying Israel, which is why it's taking over Lebanon.
That's
Hezbollah
not Iran's stance, Richard.
Lebanon.
Okay. Now let's not get off tangents. Now we're running out of time. We just have 1.5 minutes. Okay, Brecht, do you think, let me put the last question here. Do you think Arab unity, or what they're calling in the previous summit, they said that we want an Arab NATO and also Arab unity. Do you think the Arab League will be able to achieve this? Briefly, please.
I don't think that this sort of unity will be possible in this case and in the near future. And in many ways, I believe this is probably a good thing, because especially when they use words such as Arab NATO, especially when this comes, you know, from Saudi and UAE representatives, that sends a shiver down my spine, because we know what NATO has been doing for the past like 50, 60 years. It has been an alliance of imperialist nations. And when they talk about an Arab NATO, this is most likely also an imperialist American control. Or American-backed military union that might benefit both America and Israel in the long run. And fortunately, I would say that such Saudi and American-controlled Arab NATO plans are most likely impossible because of the resistance of nations such as Qatar, such as Lebanon, such as Iraq, and even nowadays, of course, also such as Syria, and even other smaller nations such as Kuwait are slowly coming around. You see that even the Gulf Cooperation Council, which from the very start has been a Saudi-dominated union, is almost falling apart and is basically tearing itself to shreds, especially when it comes to the plans that they have about what to do in Yemen, about what to do with Syria, and about what to do with their plans regarding their aggression that they want to commit towards Iran. So I would say, in short, I don't think this Arab NATO, this Arab Union plan will work, and I think the world is, and especially the region, is much better off if that unity as mm-hmm. its plant will never come to fruition.
Okay, on that note, we come to the end of this edition of The Debate. I'm Press TV. Let me thank our guests who joined us in our discussion. We had Richard Millett, journalist and political commentator from London, and also Bryce Shankar, journalist with Al Masdar News from Brussels. And we should also thank the viewers for watching this. We will see you soon.